From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Bob Garfield is away. I'm Brooke Gladstone. This week, President Obama sat down with Charlie Rose to discuss, among other things, NSA contractor Edward Snowden's leaks about wide-ranging government surveillance.
What I want to do is to set up and structure a national conversation, not only about these two programs, but also about the general problem of big data sets, because this is not going to be restricted to government entities.
Calling for a national conversation is easy and risk-free. It can be used to class up a celebrity murder trial. We'll never forget OJ, no matter how much we'd like to.
The trial forced a national debate about race and celebrity.
It's great when celebrities get us talking about something worthwhile.
Angelina Jolie did what she set out to do, start a national conversation about cancer and the risk.
You can build a fabulous career on nothing but national conversations if you're really good at it.
Today begins a national conversation on bullying. Right now.
And sometimes national conversation can serve as both a source of solace and a springboard to action.
Now, if Adam Lanza had walked into a black public school in this mythical South Brooklyn, we would probably not be having a sustained national conversation about guns.
What even constitutes a national conversation? Back in 2002, when hackles started to rise after the rushed passage of the Patriot Act, one hardened group of civil libertarians raised their voices in hundreds of communities across the nation, holding community meetings in their own fancy government-subsidized digs. I'm talking, of course, about librarians. Lynn Bradley is the director of the American Library Association's Office of Government Relations. She says that when they started that conversation, their understanding of the extent of the surveillance was at preschool levels. Now,
I'm not sure that we're beyond junior high at this point. We still have a long way to go in terms of having a serious public debate.
How do you have a national conversation? What did you do a dozen years ago to get it rolling?
Libraries of all types had different kinds of debates, programs, informational pieces. By the way, one of the things was to promote resolutions to be passed at the local level by cities, townships, counties, and even a small handful of states, asking for dialogue and to reform and assure that our civil liberties were going to be protected. We've kept up web pages. We've had programs at conferences. We've developed toolkits to help librarians and others have this debate.
There's no unit of measure for raised consciousness. But can you point to any concrete thing that your campaign a dozen years ago did?
Section 215 became known for a long time as the library provision. When you're speaking in generalities, many people in the public would say, well, I don't have anything to hide. If they get my phone records or whatever, what's the difference? But when you say, look, they can get what you read at the library, people would respond like, wait a second, why do they need to know what we read?
This may sound a little defeatist, but you raised the alarm more than a decade ago about the same provision of the Patriot Act and the same worries about transparency. Do you think a new national dialogue really could influence the implementation of surveillance laws, and where is it most important for that dialogue to happen?
First of all, inside the Beltway and in Congress. If you look at how Congress has oversight, they're not even allowed to take in legal people to look at these secret documents or to take notes. What kind of public analysis can our elected officials have in a system that is so limiting? We are pleased to see that there are those in Congress and elsewhere that are seeking to declassify some of this information so the American public can have such a discussion. Our worries 10 years ago look modest compared to what we have learned in the last 2 weeks.
Lynn, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lynn Bradley is the director of the American Library Association's Office of Government Relations. In that Charlie Rose interview earlier this week, President Obama said he hoped the conversation would be helped along by an oversight board.
I've stood up a privacy and civil liberties oversight board made up of independent citizens, including some fierce civil libertarians. I'll be meeting with them.
He met with that board on Friday. But if it's to be the lever for a national conversation, we'll have to take that on faith. Sharon Bradford Franklin is the senior counsel at the Constitution Project, and she says the first version of that board, established by President Bush in 2004, did practically nothing.
It had no independence from the White House, very little authority. It came into existence in 2005 and lasted for about 2 years. In 2007, Congress enacted new legislation to completely revamp the board, to create an independent federal agency within the executive branch with subpoena power, with a bipartisan membership, and all five members who must be confirmed by the Senate. And so created a structure that really could have an impact.
And did it?
Well, the board didn't come into existence for 5 more years. It took until 2012 to get confirmation of any members. It took until December 2011 to get a full slate of 5 nominees.
Why was there such a delay in filling out the oversight board, since Obama is at least now evincing such a strong interest in it?
We can only understand that to be a lack of priority. The chair of the board wasn't finally confirmed until just last month. Only the chair is a full-time member of the board. That's his full-time job. And only the chair has the authority to hire a permanent staff. The board is still in startup mode.
So let's imagine a world where this oversight committee is up and running and effective. What can it do?
Okay, it has 2 overarching purposes. First, evaluate national security programs, proposed ones and existing ones, and to ensure that there are adequate safeguards for privacy and civil liberties. The second is to inform the public. They are required to report to the president and to Congress, and the statute specifically says that these reports should include an unclassified version, and these should be made available to the public to the greatest extent possible.
You've been following the evolution of this board. Do you have faith that it can actually set up and structure a national conversation?
Well, I have faith that it can play a significant and meaningful role. Not only do the board members have security clearances, they have subpoena power. So they will be able to get a full picture of the operation of these programs. Right now, the public is just getting carefully selected disclosures to justify the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sharon Bradford Franklin is senior counsel at the Constitution Project. Everyone seems to agree that there can be no useful conversation, that is, conversation that leads to change, without serious, sincere congressional participation, which doesn't happen, I guess, without voters and the media eating through the entropy on Capitol Hill. Representative Henry Waxman is a California Democrat who truly believes in the power of national conversations.
Where we have all of the different aspects of our society working together, whether it's in the press and local community meetings, activist groups, to push the agenda forward to see what can be done. That is what I think of in terms of a national dialogue. Now, let me take the issue of climate change. I think this is the greatest threat facing our lives today. Yet the Republicans who run the House refuse to hold hearing with the scientists. And then they go out and assert the science does not support climate change.
So you're saying that they're suppressing that national conversation by refusing to hold hearings?
They are trying to do what they can to suppress that conversation and information that the public would otherwise react to with some sense of urgency to make changes. Now we have a very big story on national security, and people are paying attention now in the ways they never did before.
Does national conversation ever lead to consensus?
I do think it does. I think the incidents in the civil rights struggles, when people saw little children being hosed or people being jailed for trying to exercise basic rights. I think it drew a lot of awareness and understanding of a problem that people thought was somebody else's problem somewhere else. And I think our country reacted to it.
Congressman, following the Newtown Elementary School shooting, you were part of a forum for a, quote, national conversation on violence and severe mental illness.
Yes. After the horrific incidents of shooting by deranged individuals, people have a clear sense that there ought to be some background checks before people are able to get any kind of weapon.
And that really worked out well in Congress.
Well, we have 90% of the American people who back that, and yet we have representatives in the Senate and the House who are not willing to support legislation yet. But I don't think the pressure's off.
As a U.S. congressman, how do you determine when a national conversation is taking place?
When my constituents are talking about it and asking me questions, when the press is writing about it, informing the American people, when committees of Congress see that there's a reason to be concerned and start doing either a private investigation and public hearings, when a whistleblower comes forward and talks about what's actually happening.
Are you glad that Snowden leaked what he leaked?
He started a debate in this country and people starting to ask questions. That's worthwhile. He may be a traitor. I don't know the man. I don't know his motivations. But I think that we're drawing more attention to issues that we should have been aware of and should not have had to become informed this way. But that was the way we heard about it.
Without this leak, we would not be having this conversation.
You may well be right. But ultimately, what we have to have, not just a discussion, but a call to action to change things if the status quo is too troubling and not productive.
Thank you very much, Congressman.
Thank you.
Representative Henry Waxman is a congressman from California.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.